Stay tuned for The Cinema Clash as Maryland-based critics Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl debate the merits of new releases, from the mainstream movies that Hannah tends to favor to obscure foreign films that Charlie likes to champion. It's free-flowing, unedited conversation with an occasional wine wager. Two very different perspectives, one entertaining podcast. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to The Cinema Clash. I'm Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
Hannah, the wine on this episode does match a film, but it's not overt. You gotta play the game, solve the puzzle.
You're gonna make me think. It is a Casiero del Diablo.
To solve it, you have to know what that means.
Well, even without knowing what it means, I'm going to say the two popes.
You're absolutely right. It takes two popes to deal with the devil's cellar.
Oh, is that what it means? I don't know. I just figured it seemed popish because, well, I don't know. Is there any? There's probably no connection.
It's next door to Pope Francis's Argentina.
That's right. It's next to Argentina. It's a Chilean wine, a Cabernet Sauvignon. So there you have it.
Hooray. But we're not going to start with the two popes tonight. There's going to be a bigger film this week. The two popes is starting in a limited run, but it really won't be available to mass audiences until the 20th of December when it premieres on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So we're going to start with the Aeronauts. Woo. Before we launch into the Aeronauts, I have an issue. I received straight up hate mail over my review of
over
this
your
film.
Hatred
someone
of
and I'm not the only one. I went and looked on Rotten Tomatoes and it has 18 rotten reviews and many are very similar to mine. Man, this lady lit into me.
But somebody read it, isn't
straight up. I mean, she didn't get personal, but well, she got a little personal. She got vicious. It's like I attacked her child.
Well, when I saw that you only gave it 1.5 stars, I immediately thought, oh, Charlie, I mean, it's not that bad. It might be disappointing.
I am not the only person that gave it 1.5. She didn't comment on their much more popular websites than mine.
But you were probably snarkier about
it. She tore me apart.
Because I remember you said something like, oh, it was trash. And I'm like, it wasn't
I didn't write that in the review. That was an out loud voice in the theater during the credits.
Yeah, but I immediately thought that you probably were a little too harsh on this one.
I know. It's, you know what? I think harsh is combined with a disappointment. I was disappointed. Mm-hmm. I expected more from Eddie Redmayne and Felicity Jones back together again. We remember them as the Hawking couple, Stephen and what was it, Jane? They were the theory of everything mm-hmm. couple. He won Best Actor for that, and they're back again, and they're supposed to have this chemistry. Man, the Aeronauts is just disjointed. It's a ballooning movie. They're fire and water. Like they don't mesh. He's the bookish scientist. She's the go-getter daredevil. They go up, they want to see how high they can go, and hopefully come back down.
There's more to it.
No,
than
I'm going,
that.
But that's the beginning setup. What am I missing? Why is everybody, not everybody, why are many people actually finding something to like about this?
Well, I think because it's inspired by a true story, which always gets people, his character is based on a true
guy. I would
guy,
put the quotes around inspired.
A forebear of, you know, meteorology, a scientist who wanted to be able to just sort of break a world record by going thousands of feet up into the air to demonstrate that you can predict weather patterns and predict the weather and things like that. And so, you know, it's kind of cool, 1800s, for people to just sort of think back to that
era. Well,
technically,
it's in the middle of the Civil War. It's
1862. Yeah.
But it's not in America.
But it's, right, and that's sort of not a non-starter with this particular film. But what I was most disappointed to learn was that the female role was actually a composite of characters and that a woman did not go up in the balloon.
You know what I feel bad for? The flight happened. It even happened on that day, and James Glazier was 50% of that flight. What about the poor guy who got written out of it?
Exactly. And so here you're thinking as you're watching this film, what a great girl power flick.
Yeah.
I really thought that. And then I come out of the movie and I'm told, oh yeah, really, she's not a true character. The guy was. And whereas she really sort of take center stage as this movie lifts off, so to speak, and she's this sort of fierce pilot, and it becomes more of a survival movie. So I found it more the vibe of like watching Everest or something, that once the movie kind of once they were in the air, it was a very different movie than when they were on the ground. And from a cinematography standpoint, on a big screen, I think people will find, you know, a lot to sort of to engage with in this film. It was disappointing, yes, but that still compared to a lot of other films, it's still decent. The performances are still decent. I did not feel particular chemistry. Some of the reviews were talking about, oh, the chemistry is, you know, duplicated from Theory of Everything, and I did not feel that at all.
I didn't feel that either, but my main problem with the Aeronauts, why I do not like it, is its structure. The first thing that happens is they take off. They take off in the balloon, and that's before we even know who they are. I have no idea if I like them, if I loathe them, if they're buddies, if they're icy. I have no idea what their backstory is, and we only get that in flashbacks. Something happens in the balloon, then we get 10 minutes of flashback, then we'll go back to the balloon for 10 minutes. That didn't work for me. It didn't work for me at all. I would have preferred in this particular case, and sometimes flashbacks work in film. It works all the time. In this case, I think chronological probably would have worked better. If they took off in the balloon halfway through the film, and then we got all balloon for the second half, I think that actually would have worked.
I don't know, because I think people want it. You want to see the balloon take off. To me, the film really only becomes absorbing.
But you're not invested.
But I'm only invested when they're in the air. So I can't even imagine if I had had to wait another
half hour. Well, there's no suspense. There's no will they or won't they. There's none of that.
Well, that's why I think the suspense becomes the suspense of a survival movie, survival adventure flick, versus anything else. There's certainly not, it's not a will they or won't they kind of romance drama. It is more of a survival drama. And I do think that there are some moments that that you really get sucked in, and you're just sort of sitting on the edge of your seat for a few minutes at a time. But it's like the movie drifts along, it never soars.
No, it gets marks for tradecraft authenticity. They recreated a real gas balloon, and they put the actors in it, and they took them up, not 36,000 feet high, but about 3,000 feet high. So when they're up there, a lot of times they really are up there. The cinematography is good looking. The visual effects are great. It really looks like they're that high and having all these problems. And she, good on her girl power, has a lot more to do than him. He has problems, and she is a fixer. She's the solution finder, and it gives higher points as well, but the structure was just so awful for me that I really did not like this film.
Yeah, I did not love the structure, but I certainly would not consider it trash. I just felt that it was, as you said, disappointing. I had higher expectations for it, but also I was seeing it after having seen, and as you have too, just so many really, really, really powerful and good movies. I think I saw this one at the Middleburg Film Festival immediately after I saw A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood. That's a tough act to follow.
Yeah.
And so
its placement didn't help.
So placement is very important. And so if you're somebody who's only seeing a few movies at this time of year versus somebody like us who's seeing, you know, our 200th film of the year, it's we're going to watch it with a different eye. And so people around me at Middleburg, a lot of them really enjoyed this film. And so I think it'll still find a certain audience. And you do kind of want to see it on the bigger screen if you're interested in the story, because the visual effects are pretty cool.
Well, Charlotte, if you're still stalking me, these are my reasons. Seriously, it's an honest opinion. This is not malicious. It's an honest opinion.
I would just say, Charlotte, switch over to chickflix.net.
Can I give you a ballooning fact?
Yes,
a factoid. Ballooning was an event in the 1900 Olympics. That's the second Olympics. It was in Paris, and it's the only time it was an Olympic event.
Oh.
Ballooning.
Who would have known?
And they also did tug of war in that Olympics.
Wow.
By the way,
that would have been fun to see. I think they should bring back tug of war.
They should do tug of war, a movie.
That would
tug
be
of war.
Fun.
Anyways,
I think there is a movie.
We've already alluded to it. We need to talk about the two popes. And for some reason, there's two popes. As I was telling somebody about it today, and it's like, no, there can't be two popes. There's only one popes.
It's very rare.
And I was like, well, 600 years ago, it happened as well, if you don't recall when that happened. Two popes. I like the director, because we've seen him before, Fernando Meirelles from Brazil. He was nominated for an Oscar for City of God, the rare foreign film to get the director nod. 2005, The Constant Gardener. That's where Rachel Weisz won her Oscar, mm-hmm. The Constant Gardener. So we're looking at Benedict. This wasn't that long ago. Benedict the 16th. He's having a tough time, spiritual crisis perhaps, and he calls in the future Pope Francis from Argentina, Jonathan Pryce. Benedict is Anthony Hopkins. What worked most with me, I'm not a Catholic, but I followed the news. I remember when this happened. I loved the adapted screenplay. It's going to get a huge vote of mine for adapted screenplay by Anthony McCarten. Let me tell you a bit about Anthony McCarten. The Theory of Everything, Darkest Hour, and Bohemian Rhapsody.
Uh-huh.
I think you already know. What do those have in common?
They all were nominated, I believe.
They all won Best Actor.
They won Best Actor.
His
okay,
scripts
Eddie Redmayne.
Are responsible for three of the four most recent Best Actors.
Oh, wow, that's true.
He did that.
Wait, who won for Darkest Hour?
Gary Oldman.
Oh, but was that a supporting, or was that...
No. Winston Churchill
really?
Kind of led that movie. He was in, like, every scene.
So, all these years just run together.
Did the Sistine Chapel, did the theological controversies and back and forth work for you?
I was sort of split on this film. I love the moments where you really are a fly on the wall watching these two popes. You know, it is very rare that you have two living popes every 600 years. To sort of hear about what united them and what divided them, and to just watch them having what I'm sure is more of an imagined, Anthony McCarten's imagined conversation between these guys. But while they were engaged together chatting, I was really into it. Where it sort of took me out of the film was when they flashed another one with flashbacks that to me disrupted the narrative. And so they flash back to really to the 1970s Argentina and a lot of political turmoil going on there, and really a crisis of conscience that was going on with Pope Francis, or the guy who was going to become Pope Francis. And that took me out of the film when they had these extensive flashbacks, because I felt like at that point it became lopsided about one of them over the other.
I believe in this case the flashbacks are necessary. Pope Francis did not believe he could ever become pope because he actually has some literal skeletons in his closet. A lot of people, half of Argentina, considered him a collaborator with the military junta and responsible for Jesuit priest deaths. His younger version is played by Juan Minujín. And I question that, why Jonathan Pryce is now playing Pope Francis. They do not look alike. They do not sound alike. Jonathan Pryce is not Argentinian. I know he played Juan Perón back in Evita, but they don't match. That
no.
Casting is off.
Right.
But they needed young Pope Francis because he has self-doubt. He wants to retire. He's going to Rome to submit his papers. He wants Benedict to say, "Let me ride off into the sunset." He says, "I can't be a salesman for a product I no longer endorse." Benedict XVI was very conservative. Latin mass, no homosexuality. Pope Francis is, you know, he's not compromising, but he's, Benedict thinks he's being mocked. You know, your shoes are a criticism of me. The way you live is a criticism. And Francis is firing right back. You know, Jesus never said anything about celibacy and angels. The Catholic Church invented that hundreds of years later. And that's how sharp this dialogue is. That's how sharp this script is. The flashbacks are necessary.
They might be necessary, but I think they could have been done differently. And I do think that the fact that you had two very different actors, two different looking actors, it just did not feel like the same person.
No, it didn't. It didn't fit at all.
And so that was a distraction. And so while I absolutely thought the performances are great, I absolutely have it up there for screenplay. But I don't see it as best picture material.
It's not. In fact, I probably won't nominate it for actor either. Just a strong screenplay. But even though I really do like the film, it's a very strong film. And it's not necessarily that it gets political, but it's talking about today's times. You know, did Jesus build walls? It talks about the sexual abuse scandal.
Yeah.
It glosses over the sexual abuse scandal.
It absolutely does.
But it is very briefly mentioned.
Yeah, and again, it's just a fascinating opportunity to just kind of get into that world. And I'm not Catholic either, and I don't think it has as nearly as much to do with religion as it is about what it has to do with humanity and the times. And so I also love the fact that a good portion of it, I just was in Italy earlier this year and did go to the Pope's summer residence right outside Rome at Gandolfo. And so to be able to sort of see those gardens and recognize it while they're sitting out on a bench, I'm like, I was just there. And it was not open to the public at all until just recently by Francis, who is a lot more open. And also, I think they need the income that would come from allowing the public to come in and pay to tour, because the Catholic Church could probably use the money for some settlements. But I do think that it's a very interesting and engaging film to watch. And so I do think it'll find its audience. And I think it's a really good one for Netflix, because I think it's the kind of film you absolutely can see on the smaller screen.
Now that we caught up with the two popes, does it surprise you, or do you understand now why it won the audience award at our film festival?
Yes and no, because Artichick, for instance, she had reviewed it right after Middleburg, and it was her favorite. And she always feels that it's the harbinger for Best Picture for the Oscars. And I don't feel that way with this particular film. So I am actually a little surprised that it won the audience award when I think about En Masse, all the other films.
Well, yeah, I'm actually surprised it beat The Irishman. Yeah. Or Harriet, the crowd there.
Considering the crowd, but I think like The Irishman was such a long one that I think a lot of people actually... it was pretty late in the game of the festival that The Irishman was played at the very end. And so I think this was sort of that highlight. It was played middle of the day, which was very unusual. It was not one of their evening spotlight films.
Like Marriage Story was primed win.
Yeah. And so I
Best
think,
slot.
But I think because it was sort of middle of the day in the middle of the festival, people actually found it this big breath of fresh air, and they probably gave it their highest rating coming out in the middle of the festival, just as something that unexpected and an appreciation for the dialogue and the fact sometimes Anthony McCarten was there at Middleburg. And I do think sometimes the talent like that, giving a little fireside chat and all of that, absolutely help sway the audience.
Actually, if
one.
Anything should have been helped, it's Harriet, since Terrence Blanchard was there.
That's true, too.
All right, I saw one you didn't see this week, and the only reason I really wanted to see it is because it won Best Actress at Cannes. And I'm talking about Little Joe, and I'm shocked. I'm shocked because, you know, it's not acting. It's the opposite of acting. She, and I'm talking about Emily Beecham is her name, plays a scientist. She plays a flower geneticist. She's a flower scientist. She actually makes new flowers from DNA, creating new strands. And she, this
it sounds well, gripping.
Well, it looks, you know, if you look at the preview, you think, oh, this is a horror film. The flowers are like going to come to life
Little
and
Shop
eat people.
Of Horrors.
That's what I thought. I thought I was going to watch Little Shop of Horrors, but it's not. There's no screaming. There's no yelling. She barely cries. She barely smirks. She's actually doing the opposite of acting. She's very reserved. She's playing this rational scientist who talks and is very stoic and thinks about things. She says, it's either the rest of the world is going crazy or I am. It's one of those. One of them is right. Either the rest of the world is gone or she's gone. You don't really know until the end. So it's not a horror movie. It's a suspense mystery. It's not even a thriller. It's a suspense mystery. My boy, Ben Whishaw, who just won an Emmy.
I love Ben Whishaw.
I love Ben Whishaw, too.
Paddington, right?
yeah, absolutely Paddington. He has nothing to do here. He's kind of her reactor, her foil. He's her co-scientist, maybe a bit of a bubbling love story in there, but he has very little to do. I'm surprised he signed on to a picture like this. This is very, for people that are worried about genetic engineering and the second or third order consequences that, say, haven't been discovered yet, and genetically altered food. This is their movie. This is a warning movie. Jessica Hausner, she's an Austrian. She has an Austrian filmography I've never seen. This is a warning movie. She's saying, hey, wake up. This could happen. This could happen, what actually happens in the film. It's actually quite concerning. It's not necessarily believable, but these flowers, she calls them Little Joe because her son is Joe. And they look like these snakes that are ready to strike, but they never do. It's not that kind of movie. They're infertile, so they can't spread with their pollen. So they self-morph to change people. It's very Invasion of the Body Snatchers. Mm-hmm. If you inhale, it's not that complex. If you inhale the pollen, you may or may not change. Okay. Your personality may change, may not change. It depends if she's right or wrong.
So don't stop and smell the flowers.
It's not a terrible film. Just color me shocked that
she won.
A, it was in Cannes, and B, that it won an award for Best Actress. I'm shocked.
Who was she? I want to know who she was up against for that Best Actress award at
Everybody
Cannes.
In Parasite.
That is just very, it's surprising because I honestly haven't heard any buzz about it at all.
No, this is the first time I've heard about it. It was this week because it's opening here in D.C. at E Street, one screen, probably for 1 week. But, you know, it's such a major award. You actually have to go take a look, see what was happening that those 2 weeks at Cannes. I'm glad I've seen it, just so I can say I've seen it. But it has no buzz. I went online to look about it. Nobody is raving about this film.
And there's too much to see right now, so I can't even imagine how it can find an audience when you've got so much out there that you know has much broader appeal.
Yeah, so don't run out to see Little Joe, unless you're a Ben Whishaw completist.
Or a botanist.
I forgot to give you my Pope fact. Can I give you a Pope fact?
Didn't you give me a Pope fact? What
no,
did you give
I gave
me?
You
some
a,
other fact.
I gave you a balloon fact.
A balloon fact. Okay, what's your Pope fact?
The shortest reigning Pope was 12 days. 12 days in 1590, Pope Urban VII died of malaria.
Wow, that's a shame.
Yeah, now you know. The more you know. I have a flower fact, but I think you're facted out, so I won't tell you. I have an azalea fact.
You have now I need to know what the azalea fact is.
Azaleas are poisonous, but there is this place in Turkey that has bees pollinate the azalea nectar, and they use that nectar as a mind-altering substance, and they call it mad honey.
Okay, see, I feel glad that we have really had an opportunity to inform our audience tonight.
Think about this. Actually, I will let you have these. Say, you don't have to give me credit. Say, you know what I heard? Let me tell you this little fact about azaleas. And people are like, oh, how do you know that? Well, I just know. I'm so smart. You can have this.
I'm just going to talk about how the ballooning and the tug of war were in the Olympics. So All right. So speaking of obscure facts, we have our somewhat obscure Washington Area Film Critics Awards coming up this weekend that we are going to have to do our two-step process of nominating and voting. And so we'll do a quick little preview, I suppose, because we only have another 24 hours left to watch anything that we might need to see that we might want to consider for the awards. So how's that going for you?
It's rough.
It is?
I love watching movies, but I like watching one movie a day.
this has been brutal. I watched three in the past 18 hours.
It's rough. I always feel guilty because no matter how hard you plan, how hard you work during the year, there will be those by the end that people's like, oh, you got to see this. And you don't have time. You cannot see everything. It's impossible.
It is. It is impossible. And I start feeling guilted when our fellow critics say, oh, you got to see this one and give this one some love. And don't forget Portrait of a Lady on Fire, which I did go and watch last night.
But no matter how guilty I do feel, I also think there's five or six I could throw out that I love that they haven't seen.
It's definitely the case. And there are a lot that we don't necessarily still have the opportunity to see. And so, you know, we can't vote for them if we haven't seen them. And this is really, to me, this has been one of the toughest years in recent memory because nothing to me is an absolute slam dunk other than Parasite for foreign film. Everything else, there's just a whole lot that sort of are of equal value. And so I won't be all that disappointed, for instance, if my number one pick doesn't win. If my 2, 3, and 4 are pretty close to my number one.
Yeah, I have horses in the race that I want to see pop up on the nominating list. If Jojo Rabbit doesn't pop up for Best Picture, I'll be very sad. I know Once Upon a Time in Hollywood will be on there. I'm not too worried about that. But Jojo Rabbit's my guy, and even though I just saw 1917, and it will be on there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jojo and 1917 are on my list for certain things, definitely for best film. Best director, I think, is going to be a really tough call. Sam Mendes, I think, is actually leaning towards my number one now for 1917, just for the feat of that virtually shot in one take kind of vibe.
It wasn't. That's a false narrative, by the way. Don't spread it.
It is a false narrative, but that's why I said virtually.
The feeling is there.
It gives you the impression that the action is sort of nonstop. And it's very cool. Little Women, you know, I think could sneak in there. It's a really
other people going to have to do that. Strong, I didn't see it.
I know. And so that is one that was hard for a lot of people to have snuck in. So they will have had to watch the screener because a lot of people missed the screening. Peanut Butter Falcon is one I finally caught up on because, you know, a lot of people were giving that a bit of love as a smaller
I saw that
movie.
When it came out, and Shia might sneak in my top five for that one.
Well, and I'll tell you, Shia LaBeouf surprised me. Not only was I was feeling a lot more gracious towards Shia LaBeouf. He kind of fell off the radar for me over the past couple of years. But I really liked him. I watched him the night before I saw Peanut Butter Falcon in Honey Boy, which is he wrote while he was in rehab. And it's really about his dysfunctional relationship with his father. And he plays his father in this film. And I'll tell you, I was really shocked. And to see even the versatility and the range that Shia LaBeouf showed in those 24 hours in which I had watched both Honey Boy and Peanut Butter Falcon just goes to show you that when he's sober, he's actually a very good actor. And so I was really pleasantly surprised. And so I hope he gets a little bit of a validation for the year that he's had, because both of those are very good films.
You know who will be nominated that I'm not even going to touch with a 10-foot pole? Is anything from the movie Judy. I caught up with that one. Renee Zellweger, a lot of buzz. I guarantee you she will be nominated for an Oscar nomination, but not from me.
Yeah, she will for me. She's been near the top of my best actress list since I saw that film. She is the best part of that film. Her performance, I think, was great. The film was not a fantastic film, but her performance, she really does capture the look and the essence and the voice of Judy Garland. And I think that's very impressive. And so she is really, I think, whether or not she's as big a contender going into this week and going into the award season as a whole,
she's probably the biggest contender.
But I think
with Scarlett from Marriage Story and Cynthia Erivo from Harriet.
Right. But so I think that it's more of a split for me now. And so now that I've seen Cynthia Erivo in Harriet, which was also a very great, you know, a good movie, a great performance. So while I don't really see Harriet necessarily getting into the into that mix for Best Picture, I do think Cynthia Erivo, should be there.
Well, my number one is sewn up with Lupita.
And I still have Lupita. And people are, you know, still sometimes surprised when you say that Lupita Nyong'o is still at the top of our list for us.
With a long shot.
She's a total long shot, but...
she's going to win.
I don't know.
DC loves her.
I hope so, because thinking back to what her character goes through in Us and just the range that she shows within that character is phenomenal. And so I hope that her nomination doesn't get lost by the larger awards because it came out so many months ago.
So yeah, we have a lot of work to do. People shouldn't feel bad for us. Yes, it's movie work. But I think on the back end, we'll do another podcast like we do every year. saying our shocks and surprises and thankfulness of what wins and our anger of what doesn't win the WAFCA Awards.
That's right. So next week we'll have our big our WAFCA Awards recap.
While I'm crying. Like, I'm
That's right. While you're whining over all the things that your weirdo movies that didn't make the cut.
You mean Little Joe's not going to win? Exactly. Actually, that's one I could throw out to people. How many people in WAFCA have seen Little Joe?
Yeah. I suspect not many. And there are still a couple of films that I'm going to try and sneak in there over the next 24 hours before making my final vote.
Mm. Well, good luck to you. Good luck to us. I think it'll be amazing.
Yep.
All right. Quick recap. The Aeronauts, there's a hole in the balloon.
Yes, it left me a little deflated, but overall, it doesn't suck. It's just not great.
Charlotte, I'm sorry, but you know we're going to get through this, Charlotte. You and me, we're going to get through this. The Two Popes, best film of the week.
Yeah, I think I can get behind that. From a cinematography standpoint, I think The Aeronauts will have wider appeal. But The Two Popes is definitely a good watch, great performances. But if you don't have a chance to see it because you're catching up on all these other things that are still in the theaters right now, it is coming to Netflix soon. So it's definitely one to put into your Netflix queue.
And Little Joe, man, you got to be deep in your Netflix queue to really get to this one.
I think I'm just going to rewatch Little Shop of Horrors instead.
Yeah, I think they're actually remaking that.
They
I think
are.
Lady Gaga will
the
be in that.
Audrey 3.
Yeah, looking forward to that. All right, well, thank you very much for watching. Yeah, watching. Yeah, go ahead. We're live streaming now. For listening to this episode of The Cinema Clash, I am Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
The Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl is heard twice each weekend at 5:15 on Saturday and 12:15 on Sunday afternoon. Join us again next time for The Cinema Clash.